All right, joining us now is David Meiswinkel. He is a New Jersey criminal defense attorney, a U.S. Army veteran, a retired police officer, and during his police tenure, he was a whistleblower, successfully addressing local, municipal, and police corruption. He served for 3 years as the president and the executive director of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, and he now is a board member and president of a new organization, National American Renaissance Movement. We'll talk about that as well, but I wanted to get David on because we've spoken in the past about the anthrax attack, and as I said at the beginning of the program, I just want to underscore the chronology here for people, the fact that we had 1 week after 9/11, we had this anthrax attack. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about subsequent investigations that David and others did with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry to update this after a couple of decades. But understand that this is a very important second shoe to drop of 9/11. And they understand, and you should understand as well, how these things are connected. So we're going to start with a review of the anthrax attack. Thank you for joining us, David. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you. And thank you for all that you've done. I know that you've been very, your bio here talks about how you have previously co-hosted Quantum Matrix radio show where you walked the 9/11 crime scene, not just in New York, but in Pennsylvania, the Pentagon, and other places like that. So thank you for focusing on this. And again, this is a cold case, but it is not going to go away. It has transformed our world, and especially the second part of it, the anthrax attacks. Can you start with a review of the anthrax attack that happened 22 years ago?
Sure. A week after 9/11, and that's where the Twin Towers came down, and there was a crash at Shanksville, and there was an incident at the Pentagon. With all that terror and trauma, a week later, anthrax letters were sent out. It was September 18th. They were postmarked to Tom Brokaw and to a number of networks, NBC, CBS, ABC, etc. And that caused certainly an alarm. Meanwhile, within about 2 weeks or so, another set of letters were sent out. And that was to the Senate leader, Democratic leader Tom Daxel, and to Patrick Leahy. In October 5th, Mr. Stevens, who lived down in Florida, died of anthrax. And that was the first alert that there was actually an attack that was in the process. A number of things happened that were curious. One is that Daxel got a second letter 2 days later on September 20th. It was postmarked from actually St. Petersburg. And that was one of the areas that the Lawyers Committee mentioned, that if he was a lone wolf, that was Bruce Ivins, that who became the primary suspect. How did he get down to Florida to mail a letter, then get back to New Jersey, and not be missed, or there was no documentation of finance that he expended on that, or no plane tickets, etc.?
Yes, let me ask you something first, though, before we get too far away from it. When these letters showed up to Tom Brokaw and Tom Daschle and others like that, what made them, you know, how come nobody died with that? How come they identified that as suspicious? I mean, why would they be looking for something like that at that point in time?
Well, at that time, there was rumors actually going around about anthrax, amazed me. And that actually there was a exercise scheduled for the day after 9/11, 9/12, in New York City called the Tripod 2. And that was to be on Pier 92. And when 9/11 happened in New York City, all those people that were going to be in that exercise, which was going to involve anthrax, were already in New York City. And what happened was that the emergency offices in Building 7 on the 23rd floor, they were evacuated that day, and they needed a place to set up for this, to handle the emergency. And conveniently, Pier 92 was available, and so the emergency team moved into that.
Oh, but that was convenient.
that was very convenient. Even more convenient was the person who headed that, that setup, and who headed the emergency services in New York City at that time was a guy named Jerome Hauer. And Jerome Hauer conveniently, all of a sudden advises Cheney that his staff should take Cipro, which is an antidote to anthrax. And nobody knew that anthrax was in play at this time. Mm. This September 11th, Jerome Hauer is advising Vice President Cheney and his staff to take Cipro. While George Bush is on a plane coming back to New York, supposedly he's taking Cipro. So there was a concern about anthrax. This is at least a week before the letter was anthrax letter was even sent out. Wow. So that's highly suspicious.
Yeah.
Jerome Hauer worked for Kroll Security. Kroll is known as the CIA Wall Street. Kroll was the security system there at the Towers Trade Center, one of them. And he was also the fellow that brought in John O'Neill. John O'Neill had been an expert counterterrorism and dealing with the terrorists. And apparently he was too good at what he was doing. And the FBI was very upset with what he was doing. And I won't go into it, but apparently he was being set up within the FBI. So he got out. He resigned. And his first job was to be head of security at the Twin Towers. Hmm. And he was killed on 9/11 in the towers. Supposedly, his body was found by none other than Jerome Hauer, who actually talked to him apparently the day before, the night before, I think they had dinner. And again, it was very suspicious. Jerome Hauer is still around. He should be a person that should be talked to about this incident and even going up into the COVID-19 incident.
Wow. And of course, as I frequently mention, it was 2 months before 9/11. That you had this simulation of everything that we did in real life in 2020, Dark Winter. The first time they talked, had a large scale simulation called a germ game or whatever with Johns Hopkins and the CIA and Fauci and all the rest of these people running this scenario. And they did it on an annual basis every year after that. But 2 months, the first one was 2 months before 9/11. Then 1 week after 9/11, you got the anthrax attack and all the things that you just mentioned there. Indications that these people were talking a great deal about anthrax, and for some reason that was their focus with all of this. And so we had how many people were there was more than one person that died with the anthrax attack?
Is right, David. Five people died, 17 were injured. But going back to what you were talking about, that was called Dark Winter.
Yes.
That exercise. And who the brainchild of that was Robert Cadillac. And eventually, Cadillac becomes, involved in the COVID-19, where there is another exercise right before the Wuhan incident, allegedly, and that was called Crimson Contagion.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were doing was simulating a virulent respiratory infection that came out of Wuhan, if you can believe that. And that had been going on for a few months in the various states. In the United States.
Wow.
So Cadillac is involved both in the Dark Winter exercises that preceded the anthrax attacks, and he's again involved in the attacks, basically the COVID-19 attacks with Crimson Contagion.
It's interesting how they seem to always have these exercises that are exactly identical to what actually happens. I mean, exactly identical. At the same time this happened, we even saw this in the UK with the 7/7 bombings. You know, they're at the exact same time, and it does create a lot of confusion for people, as we saw with the planes on 9/11. As this stuff was going on, is this real or is this an exercise? But it's exactly, you know, what actually happens is exactly what they were going to be training on that day. Isn't that a curious coincidence?
You're right. It seems to happen quite frequently.
Yeah.
There was another exercise called Event 201, which mm-hmm. was in October. Which was again simulating this sort of a pandemic and an illness. That was a short thing I think they did in a day. But eventually it seems like they rehearse this very well and then they go live.
That's right. That's right. Now, the anthrax attack, it went through several stages. And the first stage, of course, is to enhance alarm. And, they were able 2 months after this was out there, they were able to pass the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act. Telling, you know, model legislation for the states to pass so that they could, not have this being so obviously run from Washington. Washington could give them money to do it, but they now got state laws that would authorize what they did to us in 2020. But talk about the first thing that they did. There was a lot of noise. At first, they blamed it on Iraq. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's right. It seemed like even before that, I mean, with the neocons and the Project for New American Century, they wanted some action. It seemed like they had their eye on the Middle East for a while. Mm-hmm. Iraq couldn't do anything right with them. And as soon as 9/11 happened, even though there was no evidence to show that Saddam Hussein was involved, they tried to set him up that he was basically the front man for let's put it this way, the powers for Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. And they had James Woolsey, who was a former CIA guy, saying that currently Mohammed Atta, who was like supposedly allegedly number one suspect and terrorist, that he met with Iraqi people in Prague, Czechoslovakia, and that was not true at all. But they were throwing a lot of dirt on Saddam Hussein. The problem was when they analyzed the anthrax, it didn't have bentonite in it. All right, the bentonite was a clay substance that was characteristic of the Iraqi anthrax at one time. So that wasn't there. What was there, though, was there was two major attacks. The second was a more sophisticated anthrax than what Tom Brokaw got. This was a Daxon Lahey. And this was a fine powder, so fine that it was like an aerosol. It just lifted up. And when it was in a test tube, it was like dancing like a jumping beans. And it wanted to get out. It was alive. They described in dancing. Wow. And it was highly virulent. And there was estimated that on 1 gram, there was a trillion spores of this stuff. And what made it incredibly dangerous was that there was silicon in it. And the silicon, just think of little glass beads that don't clump together, but they're real slippery. And that's what this stuff was. At a nano level, it was real slippery stuff and very dangerous. And they sent it over to the laboratory at Fort Detrick, and Dr. Ezel, who was an expert with this stuff, he analyzed it. Well, he got the envelope, and there was 12 people in the room. And all of a sudden, right in front of their eyes, they noticed that some of this stuff looked like it was coming out the side, and it came out of the side. Wow. It was such a dramatic moment. They were panicked. He went and got bleach, diluted the bleach, and snorted it, almost knocked himself out. I snorted it. That's how dangerous they thought this stuff was.
Wow.
So they had never seen anything like this before. This was not not country could be manufacturing this. And what they eventually discovered, basically, it would had to come from a United States laboratory because we were the most sophisticated in developing it.
And even the mainstream media pointed that out. And so what you're describing there is the types of things that, you know, everybody is now trying to talk about the Wuhan lab. And, you know, I look at this and I believe that the bioweapon was not anything that came out of Wuhan. I believe it was the vaccine, clearly. However, we need to be concerned about these gain-of-function programs because of what you just described. They're very sophisticated, highly aerosolized, and very potent, the type of thing that could only come from the United States. We're the ones who had that technology, and that was a smoking gun that was there. You mentioned Woolsey, James Woolsey. He was, and what was it that you said that he was doing? I forget what you said, because I started writing it down. I said, oh, yeah, this is a guy who played the president in Dark Winter. In the simulation, they had Woolsey, former CIA, playing the president in the first Dark Winter simulation. What was his involvement in this again?
He gave a statement, that's my understanding, that of the connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, which didn't exist. He drummed that up and said that there was a meeting in Prague, Czechoslovakia, in Prague, and that that was the connection or one of the connections to eventually attack Iraq and say that they had some connection with Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein and the Osama bin Laden. My understanding didn't get along at all. Yeah. There was no connection there, right?
Right.
They
right.
created the connection so that they could justify going in to a country that was not even involved in 9/11. Mm. I mean, and then we won't kill a million people and use depleted uranium and, you know, get a foothold there. It's really a terrible situation.
Come up with a new justification. And they kept coming. You know, they The mainstream media pushed back on this narrative that it was coming from Iraq. As soon as they found out the details about this, as you were just talking about how highly weaponized it was, they said, well, that couldn't be coming from Iraq for the reasons that you mentioned, the bentonite, things that would be characteristic of Iraq and how much more sophisticated it was. And then eventually, so that kind of shut that down. But of course, we all know that then they had their torture program, and the CIA got lies about weapons of mass destruction based on their torture program. That was used as the big lie to get us into Iraq. Eventually, they got what they wanted. But let's follow this thread again. CIA lying, torturing, lying us into the Iraq war. But Woolsey, former head of the CIA, making the connection, you know, the bogus connection to Al-Qaeda and to Iraq. And also, you know, even playing the president in the Dark Winter simulation. But then what happens? The New York Times and other press, maybe even the Washington Post, came out and said, no, this isn't Iraq. That's correct. That came out. They were started pushing back against that pretty early on. Is that correct? Or did that take a while?
Well, what happened was that instead of finding it was a bentonite and they couldn't blame Iraq for it, really, they found that it was an AIM strain. Now, AIM strain is the kind of anthrax that the United States has in experiments in their labs with the vaccines, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's typically American if you see AIM strain. So what does the FBI do right away? They order all the AIM strain at the University of Iowa, which it was stored, to be destroyed. They destroy evidence right at the beginning of an investigation. All right, that's what they do.
Inside job, yeah.
So you would think that anything that a rookie police officer is told you, preserve the scene, preserve the evidence. And it's typical, too, in 9/11 when they carted off all the steel. Mm-hmm. The steel was forensic experts could look at that steel and tell you a lot as far as how it came down and, you know, by the malformations on it, what destroyed it in that sense. And same with the AIM strain, there was the DNA involved there. So now we know that it's an American product made in America. And then they had to blame some people and then look very hard. The ones that were most obvious, they did not go after. They went after Stephen Hatfield, who was a scientist. And eventually, for 3 years, they hounded him. And he turned the tables on him, went public, and then sued him. He sued the FBI and got $4 million, if you can believe that, right, for personal injury. And then at that time, they went after Bruce Ivins. Mm-hmm. But, excuse me, they had information or evidence. We had the evidence. I mean, we the lawyers committee developed it. If you want to see an excellent grand jury petition, go to LC4911. I think it's LC4911.com. Mm-hmm. And you can pull up that petition which we worked on, and who was on that? Graham McQueen was on our committee. Merle Nass, and Graham McQueen wrote a book on that, on anthrax. Merle Nass was on our committee. She was an expert in bioweapons, and of course the lawyers committee was there. We had a top notch group of people that looked into it. So what we found out that they blamed Bruce Ivins eventually because of these, what I call magical morphs. There was a mutation that was discovered. They kind of said it was in his flask that he was using, because everyone would go to him to get vaccine, get anthrax so they could work on the vaccine projects and stuff like that. So he had 1,000 milliliter flask. It's called RMR-1029. And in that flask was found these magical morphs. But what they didn't tell the public and they didn't tell Congress is that 85% of that content of that flask came from Dugway. And they didn't tell them that Dugway and Battelle were very close. They worked together. Battelle was the experts in aerolization. Dugway could create that type of material, that AIM strain. And they didn't tell the public that Bruce Ivins had another flask that was his, a 1030. That was the stuff sometimes when the Dugway would send this stuff, he needed a little extra and he'd use his. They tested his flask. It was totally clean. His flask was clean. The stuff coming from Dugway was dirty. Mm-hmm. Now what happens is the FBI eventually orders all, there's about 20 different agencies in the United States that was working on this stuff, over 1,000 exhibits come in, or 1,000 samples, and they only find 8 samples that had these magical morphs. 7 of them came from Usemarid, which is where Ivan's worked. That's Fort Detrick. And 1 came from Battelle. Now, they never told anyone one came from Battelle. These was 4 different morphs that were the variant. And, and they didn't tell people anything about the content of that coming from Dugway. So how Dugway gets out of having these tested, requirement was you had to grow the stuff, and then you had, and then they would analyze it and look for the morphs. But if it was dead, you didn't have to do that. So conveniently, all of Dugway's stuff from their big vat was dead. So they were never tested, all right? Never tested, although they could have been tested. They were criticized later by the National Academy of Sciences for not testing the dead morphs, because they would have been a DNA on that, which would have showed that it came from Dugway. Mm-hmm. But the way the protocol was set up by the FBI, we didn't have to test dead morphs. So Dugway gave them dead morphs. They weren't tested.
Wow. It's amazing. Yeah, so they destroy evidence, and then they come up with a rationale to not test this stuff to show the connection to it. And it turns out that it was not just, how it was weaponized, but also the way, if I recall when we talked before, it was the way that the delivery mechanism, I mean, it was the thing itself, and then the way that it was delivered, all of this pointed to not just American, but to specific labs. And they chose not to look at those labs. Instead, they set up this guy, Bruce Ivins, as kind of a fall guy, didn't they?
Right, David. And another thing that was a smoking gun in there was the B. subtilis. B. subtilis is a substitute. Instead of putting this daily anthrax out, sometimes you use B. subtilis. And that was regularly a contamination in Dugway's fermenters. Their giant fermenters had the B. subtilis. And Bruce Ivins didn't have the B. subtilis. Mm. The sad thing about this, and we got to talk to a lot of people, we had Richard Lambert came in and basically spoke with us for 2.5 hours. Richard Lambert was the head of the investigation, the anthrax investigation at one time, the FBI investigation. He left. He was like a whistleblower because he was being obstructed himself. He told us he had 16 pages on Ivins. And there was evidence to indicate he was innocent, and the FBI wouldn't allow that to go forward. He said when he left, there was a 2,000-page summary he gave to the FBI. We tried to get a hold of that. We couldn't get a hold of it. You probably only can get a hold of it if Congress subpoenas it. And the Lawyers Committee are going to try again to go in there, and I think they're going to try to go it through a judge. They tried to go through the U.S. Attorney unsuccessfully to get them to look at this information that's in the petition. But
it's so key, and that's why I really appreciate it. It was a couple of years ago, I think, that we talked, and you guys were in the middle of this investigation, or just concluded it, and we talked about it a couple of different times. I had you on, and very, very key, because again, there were red flags all over the place about how they were lying and misrepresenting this and using it as a false flag. Even the mainstream media agreeing about that. And then it just kind of disappears. And as you point out, they falsely accused one guy. He sued them, got millions of dollars. I think you said $4 million judgment against them. But they kept coming after this scapegoat guy out there. And then eventually he died or committed suicide. And then they jump in and blame him 100% for all of this stuff. And it wasn't, as your research showed, he didn't have access to this, but there is absolutely no interest in the mainstream media or in Congress to try to get to the truth of this, the FBI destroying evidence from the very beginning. And it really is foundational to what happened to us in 2020, isn't it?
Right. Well, I think that's because of the captured media. And that's why you have a show now, David, because you're a part of the alternative and trying to bring truth to people. The media is totally captured. Maybe it was a Project Mockingbird or whatever, that all the assets are in there, the agents are in there. Unfortunately, you're not going to find any truth in the media anymore, at least mainstream, for the most part. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could find out, the score of the Yankee game or, the Packers game or something like that. And lots of times I think that's why I read the papers, just for the sports. I think maybe there's more integrity in that. But you're totally right that this the media is totally deceptive. That's why they get away with this. We've seen a similar pattern, though. look at Bruce Ivins as a patsy. He didn't do this. Okay. Mm-hmm. We got to know him a little bit. I actually talked to his son. Right, he's a police officer now. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to talk to anybody. I mean, the whole family was traumatized, but he was a good guy. He said, you're the first person I've talked to since his dad's death that was, you know, trying to solicit or not trying to get, you know, information. We had two people that intimately knew him and thought he was murdered. Mm-hmm. And we talked to three colonels. We got affidavits from them saying that Bruce Ivins couldn't have done it. This was from Fort Detrick, Yosemite, you know, United States Military Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. Mm-hmm. And they basically gave us, Colonel Anderson gave us a treasure trove of documents never seen before that are exhibits in the Lawyers Committee petition. So if you go there, you can see the exhibits there and see some of what Dr. Colonel Anderson gave us. When Bruce Ivins died, the church was filled, totally, hundreds of people there. Everyone was crying. That's the account. They knew this guy was a good guy. Mm-hmm. They knew he was a patriotic guy. They knew he was set up. He couldn't have done it. And you're right. The media is disgraceful. They allowed this to happen. Now, we've seen other, though, patsies being set up, and maybe it even goes back to Lee Harvey Oswald saying he was a patsy,
yeah.
Or goes back to James Earl Ray information evidence to say he wasn't. I think the Martin Luther King family doesn't believe he was the killer. Then you have Saran Saran. It seems like he was under some kind of MK Ultra program. And then you even have Mark Chapman that kills John Lennon. You have a lot of these supposedly lone nuts. But this was an organized effort. This was not a loner. This was not a lone wolf. This was not Bruce Ivins. They might have had programs. They have these programs they call Chatterbox, and they even have a program called Satan where they can, these are intelligence agencies. They can get in people's minds, and maybe you don't even know they're in your mind. Mm-hmm. And they can make you do things you wouldn't normally do or react. The FBI even had a woman there who was supposedly his counselor. I forget her name. Maybe it's Jane Dooley or something like that. And she should be further investigated for sure. But she basically gave she came and signed a complaint against him. And she was supposedly his therapist or counselor, but apparently she was on probation, all right, for something. And apparently the word is that the FBI coached her into doing that. And that totally blew really what semblance of stability Bruce Ivins had. I think he lost it at that point when his own therapist turned against him, his own counselor, and then they were watching him 24/7, my understanding, and they knew he went to the drugstore and, you know, apparently bought some things, and, you know, I think they know a lot more. They were advised by their own psychiatrist not to lean on this guy because he was fragile. Mm-hmm. He was not a Stephen Hatfield. Hatfield was stronger of constitution and will. He turned against him, and he won his lawsuit against him. Ivins was maybe a different type of person, and he was very reflective and very emotional, it seemed like. And the FBI undressed him in public. Yeah. He had some secrets that, just like we all probably have some secrets, and he was so forthcoming. To his detriment, even his attorney said, "You don't want you to talk to these guys." Basically, I think Paul Kemp, who we talked to too. So we talked to all the key people that were around there. We talked to Barbara Hatch Rosenberg, who started the investigation. Actually, she thought Hatfield did it at first. We talked to Martin U. Jones, who was an expert. We read their material on anthrax, so we knew what we were talking about anthrax at that time and how sophisticated this was. They didn't think that Bruce Ivins did it. Merle Nass, who was an expert on our committee, she didn't think. She knew him as a friend. Mm-hmm. You know. So it was terrible. It was disgraceful what they did to that family. The FBI was – and this, I don't blame the whole organization. It was just those key people that they set in there like attack dogs on him. That's what they did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's not the first time or only time we've seen that. I mean, they've – gone around and collected evidence and destroyed it for Flight 800. So many different things that they've done that way. It is a pattern of behavior, and they have the people that they can use to do that type of thing. So as it stands right now, you guys put together, and this has been there for a couple of years, a tremendous amount of documentation disproving everything that the FBI said and pointing to the CIA. There is more information that could be obtained, but You don't have the power to subpoena that, and you can't get anybody in government that is interested in helping with that. But we can see the overall picture of this, and we can see how this is of one piece with 9/11. These two things just intertwined in all these different threads, not just Woolsey, but all of this, the same actors and the same types of MO that we've seen from these different attacks. And I think, as I said before, and it's just my opinion, David, that, you know, 9/11 was a way of attacking our country and its foundation, changing it more for surveillance and, monitoring, surveillance, police state. But I think, you know, the other shoe to drop with this and this pandemic thing that they unleashed on us in 2020 was practiced, planned. And it goes back to the anthrax attack and the legislation that followed it, you know, all this climate stuff, but it became worldwide. And I think, you know, this thing is expanding like that. And this is the way that we're seeing them move as the alarm and the panic becomes more and more widespread for greater societal change across the globe. And that's really what this all eventually came to, is why they practiced it for 20 years and then executed exactly what they'd been practicing. It truly is amazing to watch this. But these, you know, when they start their practicing of their games, when they start these simulations and wind up having exactly the same thing happen at exactly the same time and place and exactly the same way they're practicing it, I mean, these people are meticulous about it, aren't they?
Right. Well, you know, we talked about Dax Olay getting the anthrax attack, you know, that really virulent. Well, they were holding up the Patriot Act at the time, and Cheney had told them, we gave them a date, and they wanted to, you know, modify it or compromise it and look at it closer. And, you know, they basically were attacked, you know, for wanting to slow that down.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a shot across the bow. That's pretty interesting.
But what you're saying, too, with regards to Bill Benny, who was a friend of ours at Lawyers Committee, he talked to us, and he's personally, I mean, told our group that your emails, your text message, your cell phone communications, and your messaging, your searches are all being harvested now and stored.
Yes. Right? And, let's just insert here, Bill Benny, NSA technical head for several decades, an NSA whistleblower. Straight up guy. I've interviewed him myself, but yeah, as Bill Binney said, everything is, and I had an interview with him once and I said, so what should people do to protect their privacy? Because there isn't anything you can do to protect your privacy. He said, they can get anything. He says, if they're interested in you, they're going to find some way to get through it.
You're talking about civil liberties and you're talking about now them becoming more, I mean, actually telling you to take a vaccine that hasn't been approved.
Yeah.
No informed consent. You don't know what's in it. People are dying from it, getting sick from it, and they're still telling you to give it to your babies, 6-month-old babies. So they've upped the ante now from 9/11 and the Patriot Bill, where they're looking at all your personal correspondence on your computers, et cetera, and your text, where they actually now trying to legislate and regulate how you go to work or lockdowns and distancing and masking and having to take these vaccines. It's terrible. So people have to draw a line now. Freedom is really the major issue.
That's the key thing. That's the key thing. Yeah. When you look at it, and again, you know, all the games that they practiced for 20 years and all the rest of this stuff. But I think one of the key things was Fauci in October 2019 at the Milken Institute saying, well, how do we get rid of these requirements of test drugs and stuff? He goes, well, you do it from the inside. You do it with disruption and you do it iteratively, right? I mean, he laid it out right there for everybody as they were doing it. But let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now, the National American Renaissance Movement. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is really an exciting project and it's just beginning. A National American Renaissance Movement, we call it National ARM. It's national versus global. So we're not particularly keen on globalists. In fact, I look at them as a Trojan horse, the World Economic Forum or the United Nations or the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. These are agencies we don't really need to make us a more prosperous people or a healthier people or more informed people. They're the exact opposite. They're there to enslave us and to use their money to buy our politicians, to buy our industries, and basically put their agenda in there. Their agenda is 2030. We've seen it from Klaus Schwab you will own nothing, you'll be happy. What kind of nut who would say that? You own nothing, you'll be happy. That's because they'll own everything, and you will be all zombies and slaves. And or there is his Rasputin Harari, who says you're now hackable. Forget about your soul, your spirit, your freedom, your dignity. You're a thing. You're in commerce. You know, we control you. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. So that is a repulsion that, I mean, any a normal human being would have. And what I say, David, is, and because it, lots of times it's out there, I tell people, and this is a little story. I said, when I was, one time I was sick, I went to Rutgers University, and I remember I was a student, I was sick for a while. And I remember during the period of time, I had a really bad fever, and I was reading the book, and the book was The Godfather of all books, and I was reading it straight through. And there's a section there where they're talking, and the guy says, he says, it's not personal, it's business. Business. And then the guy says, it might have been the Godfather, says, I mean, Michael Corleone himself, he says, it's personal. Everything is personal. So what I would say to people out there, this is personal. This is an attack on you, your family, your loved ones, your country. This is personal. Take it personal. And when you take it personal, all of a sudden, it's not something on a TV screen or a computer screen or a book. It's something right in your face. It's a guy right in your face who is, as I say, they like to put a boot on mankind forever. That's one of the descriptions, I think, in Orwell with 1984. Well, that's what they want to do.
That's right.
Take it personal. When you take it personal, you're going to find you have a strength and a courage you didn't have. And the reason you're going to take it personal is because you have a love that they don't have. You have a love for mankind. You have a love for your country. You have a love for the Constitution. You have a love for the Bill of Rights that keep you free. And when you realize that's all at stake, take it personal, please.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you're going to be wearing that boot on your face just like they want you to wear the mask on your face if we don't do something about it. And the key thing, you know, they keep telling everybody 2030. And that's been there for a very long time. They understand that, you know, Biden has talked about it. Everybody talks about millennials and the different generations, and we know that we're in a fourth turning. If you look at this, they understand the time of this. We're in the midst of a fourth turning. They want to have their new society in our face and on top of us within the next 7 years. So this is happening right now, and we have to be aware of that so we're not fooled by the next alarm that they come out with it. Your organization is National American Renaissance Movement, and the website is nationalarm.org. Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing at National Arm.
Let's just National Arm. Thank you. Yes. Well, the as I said, that national as opposed to global. The the A is for America. That's our nation state. We want to preserve it. The R is for Renaissance, rebirth, or revolution. In the sense of the founding fathers, we're heirs to that great history. We should embrace it now, especially now, and realize that. And M for the arm is movement. We want to do a grassroots movement throughout the entire country. The what we're doing now, our first initiative, really is a grand jury petition. It's depending on the state, it's between 82 to 85 pages. And what it does is it outlines 15 crimes. There's federal crime and state crimes. And crimes against humanity, the Nuremberg Code violations, etc. And what we want to do is to custom make that template, have a template, and give it to law enforcement throughout the country, to every county prosecutor, every sheriff, every governor, and every attorney general. And it'll list persons of interest, starting with Fauci, number of persons of interest, and any of the listeners out there, I'm sure you could add to it, but if you want to access it, as you mentioned, it's nationalarm.org. There's a legal section there. You can drop it down. The states that have been thus far given this document are New Jersey, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, and Idaho. And we're working on a number of more. If there's some attorneys out there who want to help to look up the law for the various states, we can use that help for sure. And, you know, we'll work together and get that done quicker, sooner than later. But we are asking law enforcement, and here's the strategy different. What I learned, anyway, from 9/11, when we went to the federal court, we had a very good grand jury petition in New York City at Ground Zero, which was presented to the U.S. attorney there. for an investigation to show that these towers came down through controlled demolition. Mm-hmm. And we had gathered the evidence from architects and engineers for a long time, repackaged it, and put a little bit of our own in there. It took them 5 years. Eventually, the Supreme Court wouldn't accept it. It was denied because of standing, even though people lost their relatives, their sons, their husbands, their loved ones in there. They said they had no standing for just a grand jury to receive the evidence and look at it, not make any decision on it, just to look at it.
Wow.
Now, the same thing we did with the lawyers committee before I left, we submitted to the U.S. attorney in Washington, Anthrax. Now, the Anthrax is a wonderful investigation we did. I think we took everything up a notch from what it had been out there.
Yes.
And it was our investigation. It wasn't that we didn't borrow from architects and engineers or anything to help them put it together. This was our creation. It's still there. My understanding is they're going to try and go through a judge right now, which is maybe a federal court judge. Which maybe it's that's what we have to try if the U.S. attorney won't take it. What we're trying to do here with a national arm is we're trying to go to the states' rights thing, the 10th Amendment thing. We want the states to finally say, hey, this is a crime that's affecting our people in our state. So many people have died. So many people have been disabled. So many people have gone to the hospital with serious injuries. So let's look at this and let's bring some of these alleged suspects, to the forefront and investigate it. Now, we have persons of interest. That's somebody that has information that could be helpful to an investigation, someone that might want to cooperate with an investigation, or someone who basically needs more investigation. All right. So, mm-hmm. As I said, the list is there. There's 149 exhibits. Now, this is something it's a little bizarre, but this is where it is in the cutting edge. One of our board members is Dr. Anna Malhotra. She's an expert. She's a pathologist over 25 years, but she's become an expert in dark field microscopy. And she has, with her microscope, which is 4,000 magnification and 5 times brighter than a regular microscope that a doctor would look at, she's found a technology in these vaccines that we've never seen before. These are hydrogels that are self-replicating and microdots, which is like a technical electrical little circuit that is going into the blood system and into the blood cells. And what this research matches up with Clifford Carnegie's research, which you've never heard of him, he'd be excellent to put on. He's a scientist. He studied air quality for over 25 years. He's found all these heavy metals that are in there, titanium, strontium, aluminum, that we're breathing at a nano size all the time. Chemtrails are not condensation trails, all right? They're not good for us.
That's right.
So what he's found, too, is the Morgellons. He's an expert on Morgellons blood, and he's found a protein there that the government won't identify it. He called it a cross-domain bacteria. Now, Dr. Anna Malhotra, working separately, and Clifford Carnegie, they found each other in their work, and they compared the work. What Clifford's found in the blood analysis, the same thing she's finding, is an attack on the red blood cells and oxygen in people. So people have long COVID or they have chronic fatigue syndrome. This is something you can connect to the blood, and it's like an oxidation in the blood where your blood has iron in it. Well, Clifford's found the iron, I think it's Fe2, turned into Fe3. It's like rust is slowing you down. So again, even though we look at this as is what is this all about, let's look at the context, and we have to look at the globalists. What are they up to? And we can see the pharmacies, look at for the safe and effective medicine, which it's not, they've got emergency use authorization, Pfizer, for poison. They've made over $100 billion. Right. Yeah. So you might think, well, that's what the theme is. This crime is just to get money, rake in profits, which they've done. Or this is just to basically make the people more conformity, more like sheep and stuff. But this is even more. Look at it as a transhumanistic type of thing, what they're doing in these vaccines. And again, Dr. Anna Malhotra, she's on the front line. She's one of our board members. Joe Sansone, who's leading the jab in Florida, he's one of our board members. He's gotten 10 counties, the executive committees in the Republican Party, to ban the jab. Why? Because it's toxic and poisoning people. Dr. Anna's saying the same thing that Clifford Carnegie's saying. You got to look at these vaccines, and you have to have the equipment to do it. It's more sinister even than you think.
Yes.
More sinister even than you think, David.
Yeah, that's the thing. I tell people all the time, and I have to keep telling myself that as well. We continually, as George Bush would say, misunderestimate the evil of these people and their technology. And that's the key thing. We look at this, and you can't believe how evil some people are. You know, it's just like nobody believed that Ted Bundy could be that way. That's how he got away with his crimes, and that's how these people get away with it. And we also don't realize just how advanced their technology is. It is like, it's beyond what you've even seen in a lot of science fiction stuff. So that is the key thing. And it is, you're exactly right. We've got to investigate this at the state level and at the local level, because there is no interest whatsoever in investigating any of this stuff at the federal level. Tell me a little bit about what's going on in Tennessee, because you mentioned Tennessee. I live in Tennessee. What's happening in Tennessee with this?
Well, I know it. There's some kind of sovereignty nullification action down there, and some of the people, they've asked for the petition. So we're just getting that petition together for them, and we'll give it to them to submit to their law enforcement, and we'll send it. So we just sent, actually yesterday, I sent something to the governor down there. We're using thumb drives now and certified mail, so we know that they get it. Mm-hmm. The thumb drive into the attorney general. We've done that to Texas, too. And like I said, we want to do it to the whole country. We're a little bit behind in doing that because we're just starting up. We have big, I wouldn't say dreams, but we want to do a lot of good things, and we need the good people to help us do it.
Yes.
And I think they will come. I think when we say this is going to be a movement, that's what we want to do. We want to organize the states so that every state has an arm. So Tennessee will have an arm, Pennsylvania have an arm, and what that means is American Renaissance movement. Renaissance, rebirth, or revolution, but it's at a higher level. We want a new thinking in a sense of, and I call out to the artists. I mean, lots of times the artists or the poets or the philosophers are the ones that might lead the way, but we need a new way of thinking. We're all captured by this media, and if you're locked into the media, we don't even realize that we're in a smoky room, and you can't breathe really good in this room. We got to create the new forum. The new room, which doesn't have all this toxic that you inhale, however you inhale it. And that's what this is about, creating a new society. We hope to eventually look at the issues. Maybe it would be finance, because you mentioned they want to implode the economy, basically bring us down. They want to reset it. They want to have a new kind of currency, a digital currency they can control. All right. Well, if we don't have an alternative, well, they're going to get their way, maybe, because that's the only thing out there. Well, people are desperate and panicked. So we want to anticipate. We want to take them serious at their word, as you said, 2030. Yes. Okay. Some people told me it's really earlier. They're telling us 2030. So by that time, they'll have it locked in.
Yes. But I think that's when they want to have it. They want it. That's their ideal society that they want to have by 2030. So I absolutely do believe they're going to try to take everything down and then rebuild it by 2030. So we've got less than 7 years, even 6 years, because we're at the end of 2023 now. It's moving really quickly. Yes.
And we can expect they're going to have, I mean, they've laid this out. I mean, they've had years and years to think about how they're going to do this. And you can imagine, we believe this is a pandemic was planned, as you said, a plandemic, as Mickey Willis says, and in his movies, and that they have an agenda that they're ready to go to B, C, D, E, whatever they have to do to eventually have the society capitulate. So it's really interesting coming up. This is a recent interesting phenomena that with Robert Kennedy and the Democratic Party. I mean, he seems to be the only person that looks like a Democrat from the old days when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have the Trump phenomena, which is really interesting, going on in 2024 here, coming up, big election. You've got Biden looking really shaky. So who knows what's going to happen? You know, hopefully there is an election. Hopefully it's a fair election. I mean, that might be asking for too much, right? But a nice fair election would be fantastic.
And well, we're still going to play the election by the rules that were put in 2020. You know, we've had another election in the interim. They put in that vote by mail thing. The key thing is that we got to stop people. We got to make sure they don't get a sucker punch off on us. You know what I'm saying? And that means that people need to understand what the plan is. We talk to people about CBDC, and most of them don't know what that is. And it's like, well, I don't know. You know. But if you go down and you talk to them, for example, on that one issue, and you tell them, these are the things, you know, just list out the things that have been talked about by the various central banks about what they want to do. And nobody likes that. It's like, you know, 75-80% of the people oppose every single aspect of CBDC. They just don't know it by the name CBDC. And they don't understand it's the plan. They don't understand it's coming. I've talked to people about banning on automobiles and at car shows. And they'll say, yeah, it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen in my lifetime. They just don't understand how fast this is going, what the plan is. The best thing that we can do right now is just give people the intel so they don't get a sucker punch with this stuff, like we've been punched in the gut with 9/11 and with the pandemic in 2020. That's the key thing. If people understand what's going on, I knew what was happening immediately because I had seen Dark Winter, you know, and I knew about all that stuff. But so if people know about that, they'll be wise about this and they won't panic, because panic and fear is what they have to make their plan work. And knowledge is the way that we stop that panic and fear, in my opinion. So.
That's right. 100%. I agree with you. And that's what we're trying to do, is educate the public. But first, we're trying to, while we're educating the public, we're trying to educate law enforcement. We believe that there has to be a courageous law enforcement, attorney general, governor that's going to have. I see that DeSantis is doing some good things in Florida. Mm-hmm. There's some action down there. Maybe other governors can take a lead from that. His Surgeon General, Latipo, I think, is doing an investigation now. We don't know how that'll go. We don't know if it'll be compromised, but at least it's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's an example for other governors to do it, and for other prosecutors to step up and do it. It needs to be done. It has to be done. We can't allow what happened in 9/11 to happen here. We can't allow it to get them away.
Exactly. We'd always like to see it happen sooner and a greater degree and everything. But whenever something like that happens, we have to encourage it and say we need to see more of this. And maybe we can get some other people to join in other states. And maybe they will go further and maybe they will do it faster and so forth. But you're exactly right. We got to do this as a grassroots movement. From your experience, just how insular Washington is and how corrupted it's become. Again, the organization is nationalarm.org, nationalarm.org. And we're talking to David Maiswinkel. Thank you so much, David. Appreciate all the work that you've done, and it's very important. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David. I appreciate you very much, too.
Thank you.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.